Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right. It's the Weekly Worldview. We're back for another special Saturday edition, as we will be engaged in other things on Sunday. Mostly me driving across New Mexico and northern Texas. That's the life of a salesman on the road. Got to get out and hit the road. But I feel an obligation to you people, so I'm going to go ahead and do the show. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors. But we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought, whenever I'm not focused on my extremely attractive audio engineer. I have to break my focus away and get back to the news. Not the news, actually. We're going to start in the mailbag. Had an update. One of my millions, billions possibly, billions of listeners. How many people are on the internet? About 2 billion? So we have a potential audience of 2 billion here at the Weekly Worldview. That's more than Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity, Mark Levin and Michael Savage put together, at least in potential audience. Oh, they're on the internet too? Okay. Well, you know. That's right. I got an email from a listener. He says, last week on Bob Inyart Live, you coined a term and then you mentioned it on your show, but you never mentioned what the term was. And I apologize. I neglected because, you see, I've been filling in with Bob, filling in for Bob, as he's been a little under the weather for the past week. And so I get confused as to what show I said what on. And I just can't keep track in my mind. So on last week on Bob Inyart Live here on KLTT Radio in Denver, the 50,000-watt blowtorch for the gospel in the Rocky Mountains, I coined the term proctocracy for the governing authorities here in America. The proctocracy, yes, it's a rule by lawyers. Just in case you didn't know, lawyers in Old English were called a proctor. And so I've coined the term proctocracy to describe our current government. Rule by lawyers, and also I love the double entendre of the term proctocracy. Now, see, you just got to think about it for a second. I mean, if you've ever been to the doctor and had to there you go. You thought about it. Now you got it. Okay. So coined the term proctocracy. I want to make that clear to the Worldview audience, just in case there are some of you who don't tune in regularly to Bob Inyart Live, which you should, over at KGOV.com. And then also last week, I interviewed Bob Fu, a Chinese human rights activist, Christian activist, preacher, leader of the underground house churches in China before he escaped with his life and the life of his wife and unborn child under threat of forced abortion. He leapt out a window, and you should buy the book. It's called God's Double Agent. I interviewed Bob Fu, did a couple shows with him. In fact, I think one is going to air this coming Monday, so you'll want to check that out. So anyway, one of my loyal listeners writes in, because he knows how I feel about drones and the NSA and the monitoring and things like that. I think that it's legitimate government authority having been corrupted by illegitimate members of the proctocracy running the government. Yeah, I think the government does have the right to gather information. I don't think they have the right to use it against their political enemies. I don't think they have a right to use it in a criminal sense. And that's what's happening. And that doesn't mean we need to get rid of the NSA. That means we need to arrest and prosecute illegitimate members of the proctocracy who are abusing their authority. And now, speaking of that, before I get to that, let me get to Ed Snowden here really quickly. I got an article here I pulled down off of BuzzFeed. An Army intelligence officer said that Edward Snowden's revelations had increased his blindness by Snowden showing who our collection partners were. The terrorists have dropped those carriers, they've dropped those email addresses, and this Department of Defense official said, we now can't find them because he released that data. Now, of course, liberals And oddly enough, so-called conservatives, libertarians, they side with Snowden and call him a hero. But members of our defense and intelligence infrastructure say terrorists have been changing their methods because of his leaks. Of course, the liberals and the libertarians, they say all that's overblown. He's a hero. Well, listen to what some people in the intelligence establishment say about him. One NSA analyst told BuzzFeed, quote, "In a world where I would not be restricted from killing an American, I personally would go and kill him myself." Ooh. I've said that myself. But of course, we are restricted, so mostly just because I can't get to Russia. Another Pentagon official, a former special forces officer, by the way, for all of you who think Edward Snowden is a hero, but you never put on the uniform of your country and you don't understand what war is and what defense is, all you people like that. One former special officer, special forces officer said bluntly, quote, "I would love to put a bullet in his head. I do not take pleasure from killing another human being or taking his life, having done it in uniform. But he is single-handedly the greatest traitor in American history. Most everyone I talk to says he needs to be hung. I'm sorry, tried and hung. Although I don't know if you need to try a guy who's already confessed to what he did. I think you still need some formality, but he should be tried and hung." That's according to another overseas defense contractor. One Army intelligence officer even offered a detailed fantasy of his own. Here's what he said, quote, "I think if we had the chance, we would end it very quickly, just casually walking on the streets of Moscow, coming back from the grocery store, going back to his apartment, and he's casually poked by a passerby. He thinks nothing of it. And in a little while, he starts to feel woozy and thinks maybe he's gotten sick from drinking the local water. He goes home very innocently, and the next thing you know, he dies in the shower." Unquote. That's from an intelligence. And by the way, that's not a fantasy. It's been done before, it will be done again, and hopefully it will be done to Edward Snowden. By the way, BuzzFeed reports that Ed Snowden is living in an undisclosed location in Russia without any visible security measures. So he thinks he's immune. And maybe he is, because maybe him and Barry are actually on the same side. And that's the side of the Russians and the enemies of America, the terrorists, the Chinese, all of those who are a legitimate and existential threat to America. Ed and Barry are on their side. But now back to the mailbag, my weekly bashing of Edward Snowden aside. My loyal listener says, after hearing my interview with Bob Fu, and you got to check it out. I'm not a very good interviewer because I hate having to deal with other people on my show. I have a problem with that. So I'm not the greatest of interviewers. But Bob Fu's book and his life story and his faith and his testimony are so powerful that I believe he overcame my inept interviewing skills. But after hearing the Bob Fu interview in which I mentioned Chinese intelligence, my loyal listener writes, "Okay, Doug, way to go. Now you have Chinese intelligence, the NSA, the CIA, the FSB, the FBI, the IRS, the EPA, HUD, the JAG, the BATF, the CDC, the UN, the ICC, 5 dozen NGOs and the ACLU, Mossad, they're all after you now. Even the Girl Scouts are planting bugs in your house as we speak. Have you noticed any drones over your house yet?" Says my loyal listener. He gets a kick out of the show. I haven't noticed any drones, but that's the point of a good drone, is you wouldn't notice it. So if someone really is operating an effective drone against me, I would not notice it. So meanwhile, back in Tehran, let's go to Tehran, we'll go over into the war file. Reuters published photos earlier this week showing Iran's foreign minister, Mohammad Javad Zarif, laying a wreath at the grave of assassinated Hezbollah military commander Imad Mughniyeh. Why is that a big deal? Why should we care? Well, Mughniyeh, let me see if I can pronounce his name. Mughniyeh is the leader of Iran's global terror network. Yeah. And Iran's foreign minister, this is the guy who just made the deal. This is the guy who just suckered the Barry and Kerry show into letting them build a bomb. Iran's foreign minister, you remember him? This is the guy everyone was bowing and scraping and jumping on airplanes to go meet just a couple of months ago. Iran's foreign minister laid a wreath at the grave of the leader of Iran's global terror network, who in fact began his career as the mastermind of the deadly 1983 attacks on the U.S. Embassy and Marine barracks in Beirut, killing more Americans than any terrorist until Osama bin Laden. He subsequently engineered the hijacking of TWA Flight 847, the kidnapping and torture of Americans in Lebanon throughout the 1980s, including William Buckley, the CIA Bureau Station Chief. You remember that? I remember that. thetower.org, where we got this story, thetower.org reports that brought back memories, in fact. William Buckley, CIA Bureau Station Chief, was eventually slaughtered after 15 months of being horrifically tortured on film by Mugyenye himself and other members of Hezbollah. So Iran's foreign minister, who just suckered the Barry and Kerry show into letting them build a bomb, lays a wreath in front of God and everybody. Pictures are taken at the grave of one of America's greatest enemies. A senior fellow at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies and a tenured professor at Arizona State says, quote, "This is a sign of where Iran stands on the eve of these medium-term negotiations with Washington. Zarif's move to honor the terrorist signals insincerity." Gee, you think? You don't have to be a senior fellow or a professor of law to have figured that out. I barely graduated high school, and I could see that one coming. Most straightforwardly, according to thetower.org, it threatens to heighten criticism that the Obama administration is walking on eggshells to avoid offending Iran while the Iranians are indulging anti-American extremism at the highest levels, which they're doing. The election of Iranian President Hassan Rouhani, who, by the way, is a revolutionary-era cleric and regime insider who has appointed mass murderers to top cabinet posts and pledged to both bolster Hezbollah and Bashar al-Assad. But nonetheless, he's been hailed here in America by the media and the Barry and Kerry show as a moderate, and he is no moderate. No moderate lays a wreath at the tomb of a terrorist, known terrorist, right in the face of America. They're not our friends. They're going to build a bomb. They're going to blow someone up. And we are going to be to blame for it. Unless the Jews bomb them first, which we can all hope that happens. Meanwhile, over in Gaza, the Hamas government celebrated the graduation on Monday at their paramilitary camps. That's right. They're camps that are geared at training high school children to, quote, "follow in the footsteps of the suicide martyrs for Allah Akbar." The camps, titled the Pioneers of Liberation, are run by Hamas Ministries of Education and Interior. 13,000 students, 10th through 12th graders, participated in the one-week training camp this year, compared to just 5,000 last year when they launched the program. This is according to Israeli sources, because we have no clue what's going on inside of Gaza. We don't want to look. We don't want to see. Americans don't want to see. The media doesn't want to see. The government doesn't want to see. The State Department certainly doesn't want to see. But Israel has spies in Gaza. They know what's going on. The curriculum at this Pioneers of Liberation camp includes weapons training, first aid, self-defense, marching exercises, and security awareness classes on identifying Israeli spies. Hamas's prime minister himself attended the graduation. Basically a terrorist training camp for high school kids. The Hamas prime minister, who's in charge of the government in Gaza, democratically elected, attended the graduation and even delivered a fiery speech stressing the importance of military training in developing a new generation of Palestinian combatants. He said in his speech, "Beware this generation. This is a generation which knows no fear. It is the generation of the missile, the tunnel, and suicide operations." That's the prime minister of Gaza. He added that female trainers are also on staff to oversee the training of young women to follow in the footsteps of female suicide operatives. And the unrest, the hatred of Hamas and Hezbollah down there in Gaza and up in Lebanon and over in Syria, it's all fueled and it all comes from one place, and that's Iran. And now we're going to let them build a bomb as they train the next generation of suicide attackers. And the Barry and Kerry show puts the whole world once again on the precipice of a nuclear conflagration. It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. There you go. Let it go, boys. All right. Great big rock and roll ending. I hope that's not how it goes in the Middle East. Because the guys making jihad, they're the ones getting mad. But we seem to not want to look and see what's going on. In fact, some in the proctocracy are utterly deluded as to what's going on. John Kerry being chief amongst them. Story from Breitbart's Big Peace page. Israel Defense Minister Moshe Yaalon told the daily newspaper there in Israel. The paper is called Yediot Ahronot, which I believe is Hebrew for "You're an idiot, are you not?" Well, they were interviewing John Kerry. So Yediot Ahronot has reported that the Israeli defense minister, Mr. Yaalon, says that John Kerry, who recently completed his 10th trip to the Middle East in less than a year, here's what Moshe Yaalon says, that Kerry, quote, turned up here determined and acting out of misplaced obsession and a messianic fervor for a peace deal. He added, in reality, there have been no negotiations between us and the Palestinians for all these months, but rather between us and the Americans. The only thing that can save us is for John Kerry to win his Nobel Peace Prize and leave us alone. Now, he has apologized, of course.
Why?
I know why, because I have no idea. So obviously, John Kerry is just annoying this guy. This guy's saying, look, Hamas is training terrorist bombers. Iran's preparing a nuclear bomb for Tel Aviv, and John Kerry thinks he's going to come over and make a peace deal? He's just deluded. He's a messianic obsessive. Yaalon, according to Breitbart, was candid in his views of Kerry's plans for Israel's security in a peace agreement, saying of John Kerry's life work that it's, quote, not worth the paper it's written on. It contains no peace and no security. And then he was forced to apologize by the liberals there in Israel. Zippy Livni, who's a liberal woman who thought she could run Israel but was bumped aside by more rational people who elected Benjamin Netanyahu. Zippy Livni, she accused Yaalon of harming relations with the U.S. And Yaalon's like, that's what I'm trying to do. He's been annoying me. I just want him to leave me alone. Give him his medal and send him home. John Kerry. Unbelievable. Anyway, at least there's some people in Israel who are willing to speak the truth, even if they know they have to apologize for it the next day. He apologized with a wink and a cross finger. Meanwhile, here in America, Sheikh Mohammed Ratab al-Nabulsi is in the middle of an 11-city tour across America. It's a fundraising tour co-sponsored by the Syrian American Council and the Sha'am Relief. In a promotional announcement, al-Nablusi is hailed as, quote, an internationally known Muslim scholar renowned for his scholarship of Islam, who has lent his formidable clerical authority to support human rights, tolerance, and respect for all, unquote. Now, is al-Nablusi this? I'm sure he's a Muslim scholar. Probably knows his Quran backwards and forwards. And I'm sure he's renowned for his scholarship of Islam. All of that. But back in 2001, when he was asked in an interview about Palestinian suicide bombings, al-Nablusi said this, quote, now remember, this guy just got a visa to come to America and go on a 11-city tour and raise money for whatever it is he does. Well, in 2001, in regards to Palestinian suicide bombings, he said, he said he was, quote, too insignificant to give a Sharia ruling or a fatwa. Instead, he extensively cited from two previous fatwas from radical clerics which bless such attacks. So he's all for suicide bombings in Israel. And he wrote in his ruling on martyrdom operations in Palestine, he wrote, quote, all the Jewish people are combatants. They do not have a career that a military rank does not encounter. Doctor, pilot, engineer, for example. The same as a tank commander. Every civilian citizen. They have a reserve army and all the people can fight. So this is essentially an entirely aggressive entity. Talking about Israel, justifying suicide bombings. And by the way, these comments justifying suicide bombings remain on his website. Oh, and by the way, well, I suppose I shouldn't say that. I'll probably get in trouble. I'm going to leave that. The whole issue of is a suicide bombing ever justified? Ever? That's a question we're going to leave aside, okay? We're going to leave it aside, but I want you to ponder it because someday in the not-too-distant future, I will address that issue. Again, regarding suicide operations of Muslims against Israelis and Christians, he says, the enemy calls these operations suicide, but we call them martyrdom operations. He called the Jews, quote, the worst enemies of God and of Islam, and he called Israel a hotbed of vices and evils. Al-Nablusi believes that Muslims should violently fight those who impose, he says, we will violently fight those who impose their culture and their pornography on us. Now that hurts. That hits a little close to home because you know what? He has a point about the pornography. He has a point that you can't argue about the pornography. And unfortunately, it is America and Israel who are probably the largest purveyors of pornography in the world. So before I condemn this satanic Muslim terrorist, I first would like to apologize to the entire Middle East and the whole world for the fire hose of pornography that America and Israel spew all over the world. And if we want to win this long war against Islam, radical Islam, extremist Islam, we're going to have to clean up our own house. Because the one thing you don't want to do is give your enemy a legitimate excuse to hate you. And the pornography pouring out of the West onto the whole world is reason for them to hate us. Now, it's not reason enough to blow us up in our cafes with suicide bombs. It's not. My extremely attractive audio engineers question my logic there. Now, as far as the houses of pornography and the things along the freeway, unfortunately, my dear, we cannot bomb them. Because you might hurt an innocent person. That's why. That's the only reason, I think. Anyway, we can't burn down the strip clubs and the pornography houses that dot the freeways. But hopefully we can change the minds of enough people to where that thing, that doing that type of thing becomes socially unacceptable. That's the peaceful way to do it. And it's difficult. Takes a long time. Be much better if we could start by stringing up three guys, right? the Playboy guy, I forget his name. Hugh Humphreys? Howard Humphreys? The other guy, the three guys. I think one of them already died. One of them already received his death penalty. We should string those guys up first in the public square. But no, we can't do that. We have to start with our own families, and we have to change the culture one mind at a time. And I know this is true because I see it happening in the government schools every day. That's what they're doing. They're working hard to change the culture one mind at a time every day in the government schools. And we have an example here, reason number 780, to keep or get your child out of the government schools. This is from Breitbart, their big government page. The father of a 13-year-old girl was upset by a poster that she saw in her classroom. She was upset, and then she told her dad, and then he got upset. Now, originally, the hapless dad assumed that the poster must be a prank, something printed by students, and posted up on the wall until he called the school and discovered that this poster was actually a part of his 13-year-old daughter's curriculum. The poster, you ask? Well, I'm sure you've seen the story because it's been everywhere. It lists certain acts between human beings, such as, I can't mention any of them. I can't say it. I'm embarrassed. I was in the Marine Corps, and there were things I didn't mention in front of other people, even other Marines in the barracks. And they're on this poster in a middle school. Well, this hapless father was told by the school principal that the poster was actually teaching material. Well, now, according to Breitbart, this father, now he says he's concerned about what his daughter might be being taught in school. Shazam! I couldn't believe it! Ignorant, willfully ignorant people. The father is... At least he's been upset. That's a step in the right direction. But to allow your 13-year-old to go into a government school, to me, in my opinion, is child abuse. And I have no pity on any of you fools who send your children into the government schools. And this father is an idiot. He is a morally reprehensible person for allowing his daughter to end up in this position. And the mother, too, both of them. Now, the school district, of course, a spokeswoman there, said that the poster really has to be viewed in the context of a bigger curriculum, which she identified, listen to this poster that lists acts that Marines will not mention to each other. Sailors would blush at the acts that are listed on this poster. She says this larger curriculum from within where the poster was derived, that curriculum she identified as abstinence-based. It's an abstinence-based curriculum. She actually has the nerve to say that with a straight face. Why? Because the vast majority of people in this country are complete idiots. And they're lazy and self-absorbed and self-indulgent, and they're forced by the proctocracy to put mom and dad in the workplace. At least they think they are. And they send their kids to the government schools, and come hell or high water, they don't want to admit that anything's wrong. So this lady can say that a pornographic poster is part of an abstinence-based curriculum, because she knows the majority of the parents at that point will say, oh, well, it's abstinence-based. That's good. Okay, Sally, go on off to school. Mom's going to work. So, yeah, it's an abstinence-based. Let's see here. She says, however, this particular item, this poster with all the pornographic words, this item is meant to be part of a lesson. And so certainly as a standalone poster without the context of a teacher-led discussion, I could see that there might be some cause for concern. Okay, this poster lists some of the vilest sex acts known to humanity. Right there. And, well, I guess maybe I took that out of context. She says the curriculum that this poster is a part of aligns with national standards. The curriculum is called Making a Difference, and it's recommended by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. And it's a pregnancy prevention and intervention program.
Now shut up and move along. I'm the teacher. I know what's going on. I know what I'm doing with your daughter. But Dad, back to Dad, he thinks the curriculum should change. That's what he thinks. He says, I'd like to see that particular portion of the curriculum removed from the school. Why? I'm a moron. I'm a complete idiot. I don't realize that my daughter should be removed. But he does say if the curriculum doesn't change, if it doesn't change, he will remove his daughter from that sex education class. But he'll leave her in the cesspool of the government school, where I am convinced that there is a significant plurality of teachers who are on the make for your kids in the government schools. I mean, they're on the make to seduce them and corrupt them and deflower them and everything else. And if you don't see that yet, Dad, I've simply lost my patience with you, you ignorant fool. You abusive, ignorant, stupid man. Get your kids out of the government schools. Their minds are already being seduced, corrupted, and raped, at the very least. And it will be their bodies as well, Dad, Mom. Pull your head out of the sand, please. Have I gone long? Well, let me just, one more, okay? Reason number 782, these are not in any particular order. The Wisconsin Public University System has removed all copies of the Bible from its campus. Why? Administrators received complaints in November from the Freedom from Religion Foundation, and they got so scared they decided to remove all 137 copies of the Bible from their dorm. A spokesman for the University of Wisconsin System said, quote, we reviewed the concern raised about the Bibles in our guest rooms, and we decided to remove them. We want to make sure all guests are comfortable in our lodging. That is, except the Christians. I'm Doug McBurney, and we're back. And we're going to go now. We're going to stick with school. Although, some reason I put this in the science, really, file. But then I listed it as reason number 781. So I was a little confused by this story. And, well, you can well imagine why. Number one, it's from Slate.com. Slate.com is a pile of some of the most deviant, pervert scum on the planet, writing disgusting, vile, and vulgar pornography on the internet. And I rarely go there. But I saw this headline. It says, Texas public schools are teaching creationism. And so you see that, you got to click that. You got to find out what's going on there. Even if it takes you to Slate.com and you have to avert your eyes from their advertising. Disgusting, foul, vile, deviant scum. I think I've already said that. But let's go to the article. A reporter for Slate.com is absolutely freaked out because he says in Texas' largest charter school program, in their biology workbooks, students read that the fossil record is sketchy, that evolution is a dogma and an unproven theory with no experimental basis. And the reporter is absolutely stunned that these students will be told that leading scientists dispute the mechanisms of evolution and the age of the earth. And the reporter writes, these are all lies, he says, about all these statements that I just... And so just to clue this reporter in, and I don't know if this was a... Maybe this was an opinion piece, but it certainly appears as if it's a report on the news. But as far as scientists disputing the mechanisms of evolution and the age of the earth, even a good number of godless heathen scientists, big bangers as I call them, even they debate the age of the earth and the mechanisms. And as far as the fossil record, well, we'll get to that, okay? This reporter's very upset, writing for Slate, as he has a Filipino boy chained in his basement. The one thing he's worried about is students in Texas learning about creationism. He says they'll read in a history textbook that feminism forced women to turn to the government as a surrogate husband. Yeah, apparently this curriculum is called Responsive Ed, and I am not familiar with the curriculum, okay? I have no idea, and I had no idea it had somehow gotten into the public schools in Texas, but I certainly agree with this curriculum as far as evolution, and I agree as far as feminism, liberal leftist feminism. Basically, you help destroy the family in America, along with pornography and drugs. So I cannot endorse responsive ed. Number one, it's in the government schools, so automatically I assume large portions of it I would probably disagree with vehemently. If they managed to sneak it into the public schools, it certainly would not be a curriculum that would be found in the McBurney compound for our daughters. But what got me going on this article is the hysterical nature of the writing of this reporter. He's just in shock that anyone could even question anything at all to do with it. It's just shocking.
You're unbelievable.
Extremely attractive audio engineer inserting herself, living vicariously through the Weekly Worldview. It's my extremely attractive audio engineer. Well, this author was so freaked out and so stunned that anyone could teach students that there was any question about evolution that he went to a guy named Ken Miller, who's a co-author of a secular biology textbook, the Miller-Levine biology textbook, the one used to corrupt the minds of most children in the government schools. And he asks him about certain aspects of the responsive ed curriculum. He says that curriculum questions the geologic column and claims that the geologic column has never been found anywhere, which is true, by the way. So what does the scientist say? He says, well, of course, there's no single source for all rock layers. However, the pioneers of geological sciences observed that the sequence of distinctive rock layers in one place, like southern England, could be correlated with identical layers in other places. And eventually this merged into a single system of stratigraphy. Stratigraphy, did I say? I meant stratigraphy, I'm an expert. And all of this was done, by the way, well before Darwin's work on evolution. Well, the strata, the similarity of strata all over the planet, certainly were observed long before Darwin. But it wasn't until the and by the way, Darwin wasn't the first guy to insist that God did not create the heavens and the earth and try to work out some way around. This goes all the way back. It goes all the way back, I think, probably to, who was the guy in Babel? I forget his name. Anyway, he was a mighty hunter before the Lord. And I'm stretching, I'm reaching, and I can't... It'll come to me. Anyway, it goes all the way back. Uniformitarianism, evolution. This is nothing new. I mean, this is just the latest version of it. But it goes way back. And I can assure you that it was Darwinistic evolution that influenced the dating methods that evolved from the observance of similar strata all over the world, which are obviously explained more convincingly by a global flood that produced similar strata all over the world. Okay, but let's leave that one aside. Now, the reporter tells the scientist, this author of the Miller-Levine biology book, he says, they claim that some scientists even question the age of the earth. But Miller pointed out,
well, the statement that some scientists question, that's a statement that's a typical way that students can be misled into thinking that there's serious scientific debate about the age of the Earth. The evidence that the Earth was formed between 4 and 5 billion years ago is overwhelming.
And that's it. He doesn't introduce not one shred of it. He just says it's overwhelming, and he moves on. If it's so overwhelming, you'd think you could list like 5 or 6 things right off the top of your head to just debunk it and move on. But he doesn't do that. He moves right on to, the authors. And by the way, this is an in-depth article, way more than I can report. I had to take excerpts. And nowhere does he, well, let's just get back to it. The reporter says that sections of this curriculum claim that evolution cannot be tested. And then he says, but that's something biologists have been doing for decades. And then he moves on. He doesn't say how. You'd think there'd be like a half a dozen experiments. Boom, 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 boom. You know, like if you're trying to, if someone's questioning the existence of gravity, there's usually at least 2 or 3 things you could name right off the bat and then move on to an. But he doesn't say anything. He's, we've been testing it for decades. He also says the curriculum claims tells the students that there is a lack of transitional fossils, and this is a problem for evolutionists. Really? Is that what they... Anyway, here's what the author of the secular textbook says. He says, the assertion that there are no transitional fossils is false. We have excellent examples of transitional forms documenting the evolution of amphibians, mammals, birds. We have documented, well-studied forms documenting the evolution of whales, elephants, horses, and humans. At which the reporter said, okay, could you name one? Well, actually, the reporter didn't ask that. Nor did this scientist offer even one. He says we've got piles of them there. We got warehouses full of all these transitional fossils. Let's just move on. There are no transitional fossils. There are different animals that these scientists think they can pawn off as transitional fossils. Remember the horses, the picture of the little horse that got bigger and bigger and bigger that we all saw in science class? Complete fabricated lie. An utter fabrication. Yet they expect to just be able to say this and move on. Why? Because there is a significant plurality of people in this country who do not want to know. You know, we're all predisposed to rebel against God, all of us. It's when you embrace that rebellion and refuse to see the simple truth that you can be lied to on this level, like this article does and like the textbooks in the biology classes do every day. You have to be willfully in rebellion against God, at least as an adult. Now, the kids that they're teaching this to, I have to cut the kids some slack because you teach somebody something from when they're 5 years old, it's kind of hard to hold them responsible entirely for the rape of their mind that occurred in their youth. So I hold the teachers and the parents responsible for that. But of course, once you become an adult, I would hope you would want to see the truth. But you know, the one thing that the heathens and the pagans know is they know if they can get the kids when they're young, that they'll have them for their whole life. And in fact, that's based on a biblical principle, because the Bible says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. Well, the heathen knows that in the reverse, that if they can corrupt and deflower and defile your child in their youth, they'll have a follower for life. Back to the article. After he names all these warehouses full of transitional fossils, of which he doesn't say one, he just says we've got them. He says, evolution is not a scientific controversy, and there are no competing scientific theories. All of the evidence supports evolution. All of the evidence. In this whole article, he has not named one specific piece of evidence, yet he insists it's so overwhelming, it's probably just so voluminous that I just can't even begin to name it all. Well, it can't even be contained in all the books in all the world. If they were all to be put in, you couldn't install the facts and the evidence. Couldn't be contained in all the books in the whole world. See, they're replacing Jesus Christ. They're replacing God with this nebulous avalanche and pile of evidence for undirected, unintelligent, nothing exploded and everything evolved randomly. If you buy into that, you're a moron. I'm sorry, you're not even qualified to sit at my table. You're not even qualified to listen to this show, in fact. If you believe that tripe, that malarkey, you've proven yourself a fool, a willfully ignorant in rebellion, active rebellion against God, and when you go to the lower parts of hell, you're going to deserve exactly what you got. Okay, so I mentioned Jesus Christ earlier, so at least I've mentioned the gospel to you ignorant, stupid heathens. Finally, that's the author of the Miller-Levine biology book says, the overwhelming majority of scientists accept the evidence for evolution. Now, the reporter, the hysterical reporter for the Slate, goes on to say that another tactic creationists often use is to associate evolution with eugenics. Really? I wonder if that's because the eugenicists in their writings specifically referenced Darwinian evolution. Maybe that's why. Those crazy creationists, you know, playing so fast and loose with the facts. He says that creationists imply that the control of human reproduction and the abandonment of people who might be left to die are elements of evolutionary theory. But the author of the textbook using to rape the minds of American children, his name is Ken Miller, he says, quote, "This is false. The authors of these questions surely know that." And that's it. He moves on. Now, I just said that you can read the eugenicist writings and see that they themselves say they derive their inspiration from Darwinian evolution. You can check that out, folks. Google it up and check out their own writings and see if I'm right or wrong. I'm willing to thrust and parry in debate with you if you want to debate evolution and eugenics or any of that. And I'll mention facts and I'll challenge you to challenge me. But this guy, he just moves right on. Well, they know that's wrong. Yeah. You ever heard of the Third Reich? You ever heard of Planned Parenthood? Anyway, the facts are self-evident for anyone who wants to see them, but if you don't want to see, you won't see. I'm on my way to the promised land. I'm on the highway to hell. Highway to hell. I'm on the highway to hell. Highway to hell. All right, now I hate to interrupt in the middle of a guitar solo, because you know how we are about guitar solos here, but if you want to catch the rest of that guitar solo, listen to any of the other 350 AC/DC songs. It's the same solo. You're not missing a whole lot. Anyway, like I say, if you don't want to hear, you're not going to hear. And while this curriculum, responsive ed, is in some charter schools in Texas, I don't know the curriculum. I can't vouch for its accuracy in toto. Except I can tell you that the first line, listen to this, the opening line of the biology workbook section declares, quote, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth," unquote. So that part I'll vouch for. And the attacks on evolution I'll vouch for. The rest of the curriculum, I'm just not familiar enough with it. And because it's in the government schools, I would not recommend it, nor shall it be found at the McBurney compound amongst our daughters. We kind of have our own free-form curriculum. We think we're smart enough to teach our kids. And generally, that's proven to be true. I help my wife with the English and the grammar and the spelling. She helps me with the math. And like that. And so there you go. All right, now we're running out of time. On this special Saturday edition of the Weekly Worldview, I want to thank all of you for adjusting your schedules. Although it's a podcast, you listen whenever you want. Another advantage of not being bound by the traditional bounds of the terrestrial media. We go to a Hollywood fundraiser. Comedian Sarah Silverman is hosting an evening of comedy and music to raise funds for Texas abortions. The event is titled Well, I can't say the title. I can't say the title because it's disgusting and vulgar, and I'm not going to say it. But it's going to take place in Los Angeles, as you can well imagine. And Sarah Silverman bills this as a fundraiser, an emergency benefit to help Texas women get abortions. So they're going to raise money so they can have a slush fund so that men in Texas can use and abuse women and then kill the children. Sarah Silverman. It's sponsored by a reproductive rights group who I'm not going to tell you, and they're putting on this big event. They say they're organizing, this is an emergency benefit to raise money for Texas Abortion Fund. Tickets are sold out in Los Angeles. Sarah Silverman, what is it with Jews? Jews excel at everything. Medicine, science, aeronautics, but boy, when they go evil... Sarah Silverman is one of the most evil, wicked, disgusting people on the face of the planet. She should be arrested and tried for crimes against humanity. And this is just another example. Man, what is up? Anyway, I'm not anti-Semitic. I'm Semitic. I like Jews. But boy, when they go bad, man, it's ugly. What's that? No, she's not a Jew. You're right. She is a demon-possessed humanist with a Jewish name. Yeah. Anyway, just so... it's like Howard Stern. What happened there? Howard Stern, obviously a brilliant mind due to thousands of years of Hebrew high-quality genetics. And what does he do with them? He tells crotch jokes on the radio. Man, when they go bad, they go really bad. All right, reason number 779 to keep or get your children out of government schools. This is a government school, Temecula, California. Bryn Williams is a student there. And the class was assigned to do a one-minute presentation about an object that best represents their family's Christmas tradition. She began reciting a Bible verse, and before she could get the words out of her mouth, the teacher interrupted her and told her to take her seat. She was the only student not allowed to finish her presentation. Why? Because she quoted the Bible. Now, her father, her hapless, ignorant, stupid, abusive father, Shane, he says she was hurt. She felt that she had done something wrong. She thought she was going to be punished. So what's the father's solution? Well, they've sought legal counsel. And so they're going to bring a lawsuit and continue to send their daughter in there to have her mind raped and defiled and corrupted. This comes on the heels of a West Covina school district where another teacher prevented a student from bringing on campus candy canes that had a religious message. These people are terrified of the Bible. One verse, and they freak out. It's like throwing holy water on a vampire, these teachers. That's because we two generations now, folks. The teachers who are teaching your kids today, their teachers were devout and dedicated atheist, humanist, God-haters. And they're now running the proctocracy. They're in the government, and they're in the schools, and they're in Hollywood. They're in the culture. They're in the music. Dedicated haters of the living God, in utter rebellion, hell-bent on their destruction and yours, are now teaching your kids, making their music, running the government. They wear the robes in the courts, and they're the lawyers running the proctocracy. All right, now, let's go over to Russia. You know, there's been some controversy. Russia has a law against propaganda, homosexual propaganda being in the presence of children. You're not allowed to propagandize children, telling them that being queer is okay, or anything like that over in Russia. And so Vladimir Putin has come under some fire. Been some talk of disrupting the Olympics by just spewing glitter and fags all over everybody or whatever they plan to do. And there's been some concern that if the homos go over there and homote, you know, normal people emote, homos homote, and it's really gross. So they're afraid if they homote in public that they might be arrested. Well, Vlad, he says in an interview this week regarding these subjects, Vlad says, "We have no ban on non-traditional sexual relations.
we have a ban on propaganda of homosexuality and pedophilia. I want to underline that on propaganda among the minors. We have no criminal punishment for such relations. One can feel relaxed and at ease in Russia. But please, leave the children in peace.
Unquote. That's Vladimir Putin. I think we're the only people with tape. And he rarely translates what he says into English. But for the worldview, Vlad comes through. So the White House has responded, as you can well imagine, hysterically.
We fundamentally disagree with the idea that anyone needs protection from the LGBT community or from those advocating for the human rights of LGBT individuals. We're very upset.
That was a spokesperson for the National Security Staff. So all you people who are concerned about the NSA and spies and all that, the NSA spokespeople for the National Security Staff, they're talking about homos in Russia, for crying out loud. They're obsessed with sex. They don't have time to spy on you. They're too busy defiling one another in the basements of all these Washington buildings, bathhouses. Disgusting. Anyway, I need to give Vladimir a little bit of guidance here. I know that Vladimir, over this past year or so, has been busy giving guidance to the American government, basically having his way with whomever he wants. But Vlad, man to man, okay? Let me give you some advice, buddy. You cannot tell homosexuals that they can feel relaxed and at ease and have no punishment for homosexual behavior and expect them to leave the children in peace, Vlad. You cannot tolerate criminal behavior and then pass a law that says you can't advocate that criminal behavior to children. You see, you've undermined your argument, Vladimir, and you'll lose eventually, Vlad. What has to happen is you have to just make homosexuality a crime. That's all. And you don't have to hunt people down or round people up or kick in people's doors. You just make it known publicly that homosexuality is a crime. And the government should be about the business of informing people that, in fact, the homosexual lifestyle does lead to the death penalty. That's what the government should be in the business of doing. Because the reason people don't advocate criminal behavior to children is because they're afraid of being punished for it. So homosexuality has to be a crime. It doesn't have to be. It is a crime. The government must define it as a crime, and it must not be tolerated. And certainly must not be advocated. All right, Vlad? So, you know, what kind of dictator are you, for crying out loud? Give Vlad some lessons. All right, do I have any more? We're almost... Oh, an update on an execution. You remember last week I told you that death penalty... anti-death penalty advocates were trying to save Dennis McGuire. Well, didn't work. Ohio officials, indeed, this past week used intravenous doses of two different drugs, midazolam and hydromorphone, to put McGuire to death. Why did they put him to death? Well, it's for the 1989 rape and fatal stabbing of a pregnant woman named Joy Stewart. You remember that? They were all afraid that these drugs might cause, what did they call it? Terror and pain, agony and terror, I think. Well, in 1989, McGuire inflicted agony and terror and killed a woman and her unborn child. Butchered them. This is from the Associated Press. And, of course, they're upset with the execution. They say before he died, McGuire thanked Stewart's family for their kind words in a letter that he apparently received from them. He said, quote, "I'm going to heaven. I'll see there when you come," unquote. And so you always hope, right? Even a guy who's this bad, you hope maybe he repented at the end because he's going to see God really soon. And he repented. And anyone can be forgiven, even a murderer. So we hope, right? He also looked in the direction of his family. And he said, "I love you." And after he was injected, he was still for almost 5 minutes. This is where the AP gets upset. Then he had emitted a loud snort as if snoring, and he continued to make that snoring sound over the next several minutes. He also soundlessly opened and shut his mouth several times, and his stomach rose and fell. His daughter was heard to say, "Oh, my God." as she observed her father's final moments. Then finally a coughing sound was Dennis McGuire's last apparent movement. He was pronounced dead 10 minutes later. So the AP and liberals are upset that this execution took 10 minutes. And it looks like the guy snored through the whole, and that's upset them. That's upset them. Well, Joy Stewart is a person as well. She was a newlywed who was 8 months pregnant at the time of her death when she was butchered by this man. Her husband was driven so mad by this crime that just a few years later, he took his own life. And people are concerned about him. Now, did he repent? Well, listen to this. Did he admit what he deserved? Because if you repent, part of repentance is admitting that you have to pay for your crimes. McGuire, in recent weeks, unsuccessfully sought a reprieve to try to become an organ donor. But he couldn't identify a single family member who was supposed to receive his organs. And so he finally met his maker. Do I think he repented? No. If he had actually repented, he would have stopped trying to fake and lie his way into some kind of reprieve so that he could live. He should have accepted his fate and his punishment and accepted it and asked God for forgiveness. But I don't see that he did that. But apparently he didn't have to because Stewart's sister, she released a statement saying that the family has forgiven him. The family of Joy Stewart. The family of Joy Stewart released a statement, at least his sister did, saying, "We have forgiven him." You didn't have to ask. But she said that does not negate the need for him to pay for his actions. Okay, so anyway, you're half right, lady. I'm sorry. You don't have the authority to forgive him. The fact that you do proves that Christianity in America is just not properly comprehended. That's all. Just embarrassing. I think 95% of pastors and priests and rabbis should probably be fired. Just summarily fired, and they should pick the next guy walking by the building and just grab him. There's just as good a chance of getting good, sound, biblical, religious teaching from the average schmo off the street as you do as to any of these people who've been to divinity school or have their degree in whatever. Mega church marketing. Just disgusting. All right, from the science, really, file? The director of the Wellcome Trust, professional Jeremy Farrar, is concerned about antibiotics gaining resistance to drugs. He's been in Vietnam for the past several years, and he's already seen firsthand resistance of drugs to antibiotics in the form of tuberculosis that spreads now from patients' lungs into their brain because the antibiotics won't stop it anymore. And he warns that this resistance is going to creep up insidiously on the West. And it's not going to be a mass pandemic with people dying in the streets, but slowly over time, we're going to lose our ability to fight these common things that we treat commonly with antibiotics. But here's why, and I agree with all that. It's a concern and we should be worried about it. But here's what puts it in the science, really, file. He says, we're watching evolution happening. The viruses have pressure put on them. The parasites have pressure put on them from the drugs, and they want to survive. So therefore, they evolve in ways that makes them resistant. This guy is a scientist, okay? First of all, if you know anything about bacterial resistance to drugs, you know that it's not evolution. In fact, they become deformed, and it's not something that can even be it's not something that it can even lead to higher evolution as evolution is viewed. It's a deformity that happens to save their lives and it ends up getting passed on. Yes, it's called microevolution. It happens within species all the time. But the bacterias and the viruses, they're not going to become lions and tigers. So we're not seeing evolution happen here. And it's just embarrassing. Let's see. Another doctor talks about an apocalyptic scenario where people going for simple operations in 20 years' time could die from routine infections because we've run out of antibiotics. And Farrar said he's not presenting an apocalyptic crisis, but he recalls the impact of gay men's bowel syndrome as an example when a disease emerges that has no antibiotic. Oh, I'm sorry. Gay men's bowel syndrome, you know that as AIDS. But originally it was called gay man's bowel syndrome. And I don't want to get into why, but that's the Weekly Worldview for this week, folks. Should the Lord tarry, I'll be back next week. I want to thank KGOV, Theology Online, American Right to Life, and as always, my other brother, Darryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. And until next week, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.